This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Man Bites Dog Theater has thrived as a Durham institution these past 25 years. It's brought thought-provoking works to curious audiences, and it's nurtured other great theater groups as they've tried to gain a foothold in the Triangle. It was the creation of two Durhamites, Jeff Storer and Ed Hunt. Their first play was an avant-garde production called 70 Scenes of Halloween. It follows a couple dealing with the fallout from an affair, but this is no ordinary narrative. It's 70 fragmented scenes, and when taken together, they give you the picture of a marriage, but it's not a straight-line narrative. And in keeping with the Halloween theme, there are plenty of other worldly participants. 70 Scenes of Halloween was produced by Man Bites Dog Theater in an empty shoe store in downtown Durham back in 1987. 25 years later, they're going to do it again at their permanent home on Foster Street. 70 Scenes of Halloween runs through December 15th. The next day, the theater hosts a birthday party from 4 to 8 p.m. Ed Hunt is here. Ed's co-founder of Man Bites Dog, did it 25 years ago. Also with us, Akiva Fox, co-director of 70 Scenes of Halloween, the latest version, and two actors, Emily Hill and Carl Martin. Welcome to all of you. Great to have you on the program.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Ed, why'd you open a theater here? What was going on in Durham in 87, and why open Man Bites Dog?
Well, my partner Jeff and I were seeing theater around the country that we really found interesting and wanted to see in Durham. And there was a lot of theater going on, but it was something of a narrow part of the spectrum of possible theater. And we realized that the only way to see some of the things we wanted to see was to do them. And the other factor was the play The Normal Heart, which had opened in New York in 1985. We really wanted to see and or do that in Durham and realized the way to do it was to start a company and to do a season with that as the focal point and to find a couple of other plays to do that season.
And you've really made a mark for yourselves putting out and producing thought-provoking pieces off the mainstream, but excellent work. And yet you're going to do this in a city like Durham, which is – this is 1987 now. That's not Durham today. And you're going to do something that's a little off-center. What were you thinking, Ed?
Well, we were thinking our marketing research was going to be to do the play and see if anybody came to see it.
There you go.
So, and they did, which kept us going through that season and went well enough that we decided to keep doing it. But, yes, you could at that time walk in downtown Durham, step outside the door, and would not see anybody for two or three blocks.
I mean, it was theatrical in that it looked like a movie set. In a way, you know, empty buildings that were kind of nice looking, but nobody in them.
Yeah, it could have been a great post-apocalypse.
So. Right. So what was the what about the theater scene here in Durham, though? What was that like?
There was a lot going on, but it tended to be more familiar fare, but, you know, some really good stuff going on. There was a community theater called Durham Theater Guild. The Savoyards were still doing their thing. Playmakers was going strong over in Chapel Hill. Raleigh Ensemble Players, who are a real pioneer in the area, had already been going 5 years, I think, when we started. They sadly closed down last year, but they were really doing some work that was really introducing audiences in the area to a lot of things. And I just found recently, I discovered that there was a theater back in the early 60s in Durham that I'd never heard of and whose name escapes me right now. But they were also doing things like No Exit. They were doing tent theater productions. And then I guess they just sort of disappeared, but I'm starting to dig into that. So there's been a long history of theater in Durham.
Tell us about 70 Scenes of Halloween. When you did it back then, why did you decide to start with that one? How did it go?
We had discovered the script. It's by Jeffrey M. Jones, who's a really interesting playwright, in an anthology called Theater of Wonders by a playwright named Mack Wellman. And it was almost like a construction kit. It was like, here are all the pieces to this play. Put them together and you will have a play, but we're not going to give you a diagram as to how the pieces fit together. And the specific instructions from the playwright were to put them together in any order, create your own narrative from that. We found that very intriguing, and one of the kinds of plays we'd always been interested in doing were ones that played really strongly with messing around with the form of theater. And part of that is to just continually strive to surprise your audience. Any point at which your audience can sort of sit back and say, this is very familiar and I'm very comfortable with this, you probably need to reexamine what you're doing.
That's the time to lob the grenade, shake things up. Well, so Akiva, tell us about this play and how you came to know about it and decide to do it again 25 years later.
Well, the operative word for me is co-director here, and I couldn't have done it without my co-director, Adam Sobzi, who can't be with us today because he's in Nashville covering the winter meetings of baseball. But Adam had seen this play when he was 16 years old. The only plays he had known until then were your Ibsens and your Arthur Millers and your fairly standard narrative plays. And this play just knocked him backwards, like an anvil hit him on the head, he said. And so for him, it was a revelation, and it's the reason he's a playwright today and a writer. So we met Adam, Emily and Dan and myself, the other participants in this play. We have a little company called Haymaker, and we met him totally by chance. And he said, there was this amazing play I want to show you. It was the play that got me interested. And oh, by the way, it was Man Bites Dog's first play. So we did a first reading of it, just the four of us in my living room a few months back. And then we pitched to Ed and Jeff and said, what better way to bring this play back than to do it for your 25th birthday?
So how do you make these decisions? You've got these – I assume there are actually 70 scenes that you can mix
truth and advertising, absolutely.
Any way you want. Do you just throw them up in the air, pull them out of a hat, or do you try to sort of impose yourself on it a bit?
Well, we literally spent about the last 4 or 5 months since we made this decision with a corkboard behind us moving the scenes around. We brought these actors in very early, started moving them around, got their opinions, did 3 or 4 readings of it in different orders. We did an order where it was very narrative, and it was an extremely boring play. So by the end, we started to build a narrative of our own. It's an amazing thing most plays don't give you. You get to sculpt what story you're telling through the order of these scenes. So it's not a traditional narrative play. A does not lead to B to C to D, all the way to Z. In this case, things are mixed up such that you can understand this play by seeing all sides of the couple as their relationship breaks down.
And Carl, you actually saw this play back in 87 when it was first staged here, right?
Yeah, I wish I could say I was younger than Adam Sobzi's 16 when I saw it, but I cannot tell a lie. I was an undergrad and friends with Ed and Jeff, and I saw all three plays that first season. And I've really enjoyed, you know, coming back to it as an actor. And also, there's a lobby display over there right now with flyers and promo cards from all the plays. And it's really fun just to stand in the lobby and, oh, I saw that one. Oh, that one was really good. That one was not so good. You know, whatever. But
right.
Just to remember all the different things that they've done over there have just been – that we've done. I've been in 5 or 6 shows over there. And
It sounds like 70 scenes is not the kind of thing that was going on in the Triangle. So it would have been a kind of a new experience for you, was it, seeing a play like that at all?
Definitely a new experience. I mean, it's hard to remember everything about it. You can't, because it's so nonlinear, you just kind of remember fragments. I remember Barbara Dickinson saying a line I can't say on the air, but just she comes out at the beginning of scene. I don't know the numbers of the scenes, Frank. I have no idea what number right. It is, but she comes out and states a wish that she has for an anatomical change in her body.
I see.
Yes, and I've never forgotten it. I mean, she came out and stabbed the floor with a knife and just screamed it. And there's a number of scenes that just kind of stick with you. I mean, you come away with an overall feel of, you know, a relationship in its many facets, yeah. but also just different piercing images of odd things that happened in the theater.
Well, I wonder if I can get you and Emily to do a scene for us now.
Sure.
We'd be thrilled.
Are you ready?
What?
Are you ready to go? We're going.
What about Jeff?
Jeff's not coming. It's just you. He's already gone. It's just you.
He's gone already?
Yeah. Come on, let's go, Joan.
Oh, I don't know. Oh, now I'm all confused. I don't know. I'll tell you, I was up in the bedroom getting ready, and this tremendous feeling of emptiness came over me. It was like the whole thing seemed so pointless all of a sudden. I guess everybody feels that way sometimes. I don't know. You think you know somebody, but you really never know people. You get these ideas in your head. You think, that's the way things are, but they're not. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I just don't know anything. And I never did know anything, and I never really will. Not really. I don't know. Well, let's go. Oh, okay. Or let's not. I don't care.
blackout.
Carl Martin and Emily Hill, a scene from 70 scenes of Halloween on stage at Man Bites Dog Theater to celebrate the 25th anniversary of that institution here in Durham. So, Emily, let me ask you what it's like to take a part in a play that doesn't have a kind of a beginning, middle, and end. You parachute into these scenes. Is that a little more challenging than?
It's incredibly challenging. It's probably one of the hardest plays I've ever done, I think. And with Haymaker, the company that Akiva and Dan and I are in, we write our own pieces. So that's really saying something, that this has been actually harder than that. It's really hard to get a hold of Joan as a character because she changes in every scene. She's possessed in some scenes. She's mild-mannered in some scenes. She's swallowing her emotions in others, and in some she's just exploding. And so as an actor, I just had to create my own idea of what she is and hope that the audience can follow that through line through all of the different variations of Joan, but you just kind of have to put it out there and hope for the best.
Well, let me ask you, and then I'll ask Carl if you cheated. In other words, did you assemble it in a linear arc?
I did not.
Just to see how it might come out.
Well, when we read it, we read a couple of versions, and one of them being linear, and I've actually read it on my own in order. So those scenes are ordered in number order, and they're not linear in number order either. So there's really nothing to kind of grab onto linearly.
Carl?
I didn't cheat, as you say. I mean, I came to it knowing it would be, you know, a box of craziness. And I am fortunate in my part in that I do a scene and then I am off stage for two or three scenes while Dan and Emily do two or three in a row. And I carry a little cheat sheet in my costume. And after every scene, I just break it out. All right, what's next? What's next? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then I'm ready to go.
Well, Ed Hunt, let me ask you. It seems, you know, crazy and out of order and all that. But, of course, that's how life is and certainly how relationships are. We remember high points and low points and a lot of the stuff in between we forget. And a partner will recall an episode that's important to them and you've forgotten all about it. I mean, that's really how things go, isn't it?
It is. And it's also complicates itself by sometimes you're looking at one of the characters' viewpoints of the other characters. Sometimes it switches. And what it does really interestingly, which we love, is that it forces the audience to be actively engaged in it because it's not presenting to the audience, here's what's happening, here's what it means. Mm-hmm. The audience literally has to actively engage and say, what is going on, figure out, you know, an out-of-order sequence and put it together in their own heads and figure out what their own story is.
Well, now that creates a barrier for some. So how has it been in this area for that kind of very challenging and I think very rewarding theater? But you're saying get in your car, drive here, pay the ticket price, and oh, think.
The enticement is that it's a heck of a lot of fun. It's you're watching this and sometimes it's hilariously funny. Sometimes it's horrifying. Sometimes it's spooky. And part of the fun of it is you don't know what's coming next. Box of craziness, I think we should have used that as the tagline. But it really is like a funhouse ride in a sense, but with some real insight into who these people are. And I don't think anybody's going to watch it and not recognize themselves in one or more scenes.
And has that – I mean, you've been here for 25 years, so that sort of answers the question. There is an appetite for this kind of thing here in Durham and in the larger Triangle area, I guess.
Sure. And again, our initial mission was there's stuff that is really fascinating being done all around the country that, you know, is not being done here. We'd like to see that. So we've tried to keep doing that. But what we've also wanted to see and are seeing in a really interesting way is other companies in the area are coming to the area like Haymaker did and saying this is a rich and fertile area to try everything.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, Akiva. What it was about Durham that brought you here? Because you're not from here. You came down from the D.C. area, right?
Absolutely. And when Ed calls it rich and fertile, it's rich and fertile because people like Jeff and Ed were the ones who sowed the ground first. We literally moved from Washington, D.C. About 2 years ago now, and we looked all around America to see where we'd want to live and work and make the kind of work we want to make, which isn't either cheap or easy to make. And as we were looking at cities, Durham leaped out because, number one, it's growing. But number two, it seemed like there was an audience there and an audience that had been prepared by the kind of work that people like Jeff and Ed did. You know, I've lived in some of the big theater cities in America. I've lived in Boston and Philadelphia and Washington and spent some time in New York and Chicago and elsewhere. And I'd say Durham is really lucky in a way to have a company like Man Bites, which is doing this kind of interesting and different work. And it wouldn't be possible for us to try and do the kind of work we do if there weren't, you know, places like Playmakers and places like Man Bites and places like Little Green Pig and assorted other varieties of theater and arts in general that are going on here. So one of the best things we've been able to do since we've moved here is be able to find artistic partners. And in the case of Jeff and Ed, sort of artistic godfathers.
Well, and that's what you've done in a lot of ways is nurtured a lot of groups, Little Green Pig among them, and Haymakers, that can come through and commission their own works, bring them to your theater as well.
Yeah, and since we got our own building 12 years ago, one of the strongest, you know, things that's helped us is the ability to invite guest companies and artists in, to find people who are doing interesting work and saying, would you like to do that in our theater? And it's certainly self-interest as well, because otherwise we would have to be doing the work to have stuff going on in the theater all year. It's a nice relief to have somebody come in and say, here's the space.
But those somebodies are there. I mean, the interesting thing is they are there. There's
absolutely
quality talent, a number of companies, and they're right here in the Durham area, producing, commissioning, performing these works.
Little Green Pig has done some amazing work in the area. We just had Tori Benn, who's an amazing puppeteer, doing her show in our space. We were thrilled to have that. We've got Jim Haverkamp doing the Strange Beauty Film Festival coming up. So our hope for that is we're introducing our audiences to a rich variety of stuff, and we're hoping to get to the point that there's just so much good stuff out there that we don't have time for all of it, and the problem is
Man Bites Dog
too. Choosing.
We're ready for it. What's been the impact of the DPAC?
DPAC has been great for us. I know people were saying, oh, this is going to be problematic, but for us, we're not directly competing with them. We're in a small, black box theater that seats maybe 100, and tickets are, south of $20.
So you're not going to be doing The Lion King, is what you're saying.
So we're not in a multimillion dollar facility with, tickets, in a price range that's a lot bigger than ours. What happens with DPAC is legitimizes Durham as a destination for the arts. Their first year, I believe over 50% of their audience was coming in from Raleigh, and I will bet you that 90% of that audience, it was their first time or one of the rare times they would come to Durham for an event other than perhaps the baseball game. So of that audience, only a small percentage of them would be an audience that would be interested in the kind of work we do. But of that percentage, some of them are going to say, what else is going on down here? We tried this. This was great. They're great restaurants. There seems to be a lot going on. Let's explore. And we're feeling like we're getting that part of that audience that is really interested in the kind of stuff we do as well.
And the variety in the Triangle is amazing. If you think about what you do, Playmakers, Burning Coal, it's all different sorts of things. And the DPAC bringing in the big Bafo shows. I mean, it's sort of all here, and there's a niche for everybody.
There is, but again, I'm telling you, there's a lot of really interesting work being done that I'm waiting to see somebody say, oh, we could do that in Durham.
Even more. So that's you in the next 25 years. What do you see for you in the theater?
I'm just looking through the end of this year. We've got a great season coming up, so we're going to get through that and then start planning for next season.
What's coming up? Give us a brief preview.
After 70 Scenes closes, we've got the Strange Beauty Film Festival coming in January. We've got two playwrights that haven't been done in the area, Enda Walsh's New Electric Ballroom and The Homosexuals by Philip Dawkins, who's a hot new Chicago playwright. We just had this fall the North Carolina premiere of Terrell Alvin McCraney's Brother's Size, and he is an amazing playwright. Again, we're the first ones in North Carolina to present him, and that's just thrilling. So that's what we've got coming up.
Congratulations, Ed. Happy birthday. And thank all the rest of you for being on the program.
Thanks, Frank. Thank you.
Ed Hunt, co-founder of Man Bites Dog Theater, Akiva Fox, co-director of 70 Scenes of Halloween, Emily Hill, Carl Martin are actors in that production. 70 Scenes of Halloween runs through December 15th. And then the next day, December 16th, the theater's hosting a birthday party, 4 to 8 p.m. For more information, go to manbitesdogtheater.org, B-I-T-E-S. Just ahead, the rise of women in slam poetry. Stay tuned.